Welcome to the Jailhouse Prophets Podcast, a production of the Elkhart County Jail Ministry.
For today's conversation, we'll be joined by your host, Corey Martin, chaplain for the Elkhart County Jail Ministry, myself, Tosh Davis McCary, housing coordinator for the Elkhart County Jail Ministry, and our special guest, Roosevelt.
Welcome, everybody. This is the first podcast of Jailhouse Prophets, and we're thrilled. Our very first guest, we selected very carefully. Somebody who, I don't know, we've known for each other for how long, Roosevelt?
I'd say about at least 15, 20 years.
Well, yeah. Well, probably closer to 15. I've been here for about 12 years. So maybe the whole time I've been here, at least. Do you remember the first time we met?
I don't. Not the exact very first time.
I don't either.
We had so many encounters, I can't hardly remember the first one.
Yeah, I know. You just seem like somebody I've always known. And then also, we have with us Tosh Davis McCary, our housing coach for the jail ministry.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, Tosh. And you and Roosevelt have known each other for a while, too. Is that right?
Yes. Very long time.
How do you guys know each other?
So personally, we know each other like just from the old neighborhood in Elkhart. And then professionally, I would say probably like 10 years.
Okay. So I'm going to give you my first impression of you, Roosevelt.
All right.
There's no need to be nervous.
True.
So you know how sometimes we see somebody, we have this picture of them formed in our mind of what they're probably like?
Absolutely.
Okay. I got to know you, and you seem to me, right, the Roosevelt I know, you seem to be very sincere, very genuine, very kind-hearted, very warm, and you seem to be well-loved by everybody here in the jail. Other inmates, officers, not to ask you to brag on yourself, but is that accurate?
Yeah, it got a lot to do with the woman that raised me.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I was raised, to respect people and try to just, you know, hand out the hospitality.
What? Okay, so tell us a bit. Were you born and raised in Elkhart County?
I was born in Benton Harbor, Michigan. But I was raised pretty much in Elkhart, the streets of Elkhart.
Yeah.
School system. Been here since seventh grade.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
How old are you now?
49.
49.
Got a birthday next month.
You're kidding me. I turn 47 tomorrow.
Roosevelt, you're half a century.
And it's half a century of wisdom. That's how you look at it.
Absolutely. I think I found through first conception of Roosevelt and then, you know, ongoing interactions that if a person has a problem or some sort of conflict with Roosevelt, it's probably the other person.
Yeah, that seems to be true to me. It's hard to think of you having a big issue. You kind of roll with the flow. Mm-hmm. You're very even keel is my impression of you. So growing up, were you close to your parents, your mom, your dad?
My mom, my stepdad, pretty much.
Okay.
My biological father, though, all the contact I had with him was usually probably me contacting him, not him contacting me.
Yeah. I would think that would have to be hard. How do you deal with something like that as you're a kid growing up?
It was at first, it was kind of hard, but once you get older, you start to see the patterns and you start to just accept it, whether it's what you want or not. You ain't got no choice but to accept it because.
Yeah, you say you have no choice but to accept it, but I know a lot of people who have had similar circumstances and they haven't accepted it. Like some people make peace with it or they forgive their parents and some people don't. So I don't know that you have to do it, but you've chosen to do it.
Yeah.
But what was the process for you where you had to come to terms with the fact that maybe you didn't have a relationship with your father that maybe you would have wanted?
Growing up with my real father, it was kind of hard because I was always the little boy that was sitting on the front porch looking down the street waiting for his car to turn the corner or something like that. And before you know it, it was getting dark outside. He never showed up. But because my mom, she gave us so much love to where, you know, it took up for the love that my dad wasn't there to give us.
So the name of this podcast is Jailhouse Prophets. And one of the things I see all the time are people like you who have managed to forgive somebody for a pretty big thing. And I've had harder troubles forgiving people for far fewer things. It's always so intriguing to me, people who are in here who have found the ability to forgive people in their lives. Was there a point in your life where you were, where you maybe have found like you did not, you hadn't forgiven or come to terms with it, and there was anger or resentment that you had to deal with?
Yeah. I was more angry with myself, though.
Why is that?
For a lot of my past mistakes, because the ability that I had to actually inspire others, or, you know, I just let all that go down the drain. Mm-hmm. I had a positive future ahead of me once upon a time.
What did the positive future look like?
You know, by me growing up, I was one of the bigger kids in class. I was athletic. They wanted me to play football, but I loved basketball. I wasn't as tall as most basketball players, but I played the game pretty good. And a lot of things, cooking is my passion.
Really?
I love to cook, yeah. I'm the youngest of 8 kids, so it's like I adapted to my mother a lot more by being the youngest child, and she loved to cook.
That's interesting, because I love to eat.
Me too.
What do you like to cook? Do you specialize in something?
One of my specialties is a supreme egg omelet. I make jalapeno burgers. I grill all year round.
Okay.
So that's I love being on the grill. Love being outside.
Is cooking and like feeding people, do you find that to be like a ministry?
Yes. That was one of my mom's specialties. On 4th of July, she feed anybody. We always had a big party outside, a block party with our neighbors across the street. And it usually turned out pretty good. Mm-hmm. She didn't care who came and got a plate or anything. So, but I love to see somebody taste my food, and you see them when they close their eyes, mm-hmm. and be like, yeah, I know, I love it. I love to see that in people.
What was your mother's name?
Laverne.
Laverne.
Yeah.
I think I hear you saying a lot, and we see through like your behavior with others that like you're a reflection of her. Like you've certainly carried on her legacy of like pouring into others and, you know, genuinely caring about the next person.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know Laverne.
She used to minister to the women in the old county.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She did that for probably about 8-9 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. It feels like your generosity has carried over to the inside here. I mean, sometimes, I mean, people can think of JL, people who are here, it's maybe hard to be vulnerable or compassionate or kind or generous while you're here. But you feel like somebody to me who, this is just who you are. It doesn't matter if you're in here or out here. People just know Roosevelt is a good person to be around.
That didn't used to be so. But yeah. Yeah, I always thought like my biggest thing was like, if I died 10 years ago, what type of legacy would I leave for my kids?
Yeah.
And now that me having grandkids, it's like I got a granddaughter. This would be my second. I got a grandson. He finna be 4 in July. Then I got a granddaughter that's due in probably within the next 3.5 months. So it's kind of like, what type of insurance would I be then left them behind if I was to leave here today? And I'm like, nothing. What could they say? My dad did a lot of time in prison, or my dad could fight, or,
right,
you know, that type of thing. And I didn't like that.
Those are sobering thoughts.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you haven't always been like this. During the time in your life where you felt like you weren't the best like representation of yourself, what did that look like?
At the moment, it didn't care, because I was probably in a moment, one of those moments where I didn't give a care about nothing at that time. But after, I always sit down and I think about what I did wrong, and I always felt bad. That was one thing about me my whole life. If I got in a fight and I hurt somebody, I felt bad about that person. I always went back and apologized, like, man, I'm sorry, you know. So
I feel like sometimes we can look back in our past and there's like a defining moment or an event that kind of wakes us up and we think, oh, I need to change something. Or sometimes it's a long, slow progress. For you, can you look back and say, this is the thing that kind of woke me up and made me realize I want to do things differently? Or was it kind of a long journey that led you to where you're at right now?
The biggest one for me was being in prison when my mom was diagnosed with lung cancer. And you know, I was always the one that told her, say, I don't care, I'll never let you go in a nursing home. If something wrong with you, I'll take care of you. If I had to, whatever, by all means, whatever I had to do, I would do it. And by her getting sick while I was incarcerated, and her going through the chemo and radiation just to try to stay alive till I got home, that was something that kind of I gravitated to that always made me hold my head up like, man, you know, my mom is not a superhero because I always thought I could never lose her. So when she got sick and I wasn't there, it got down to a week. I was able to get out and spend the last 6 days with her. That was probably a forever changing moment in my life.
So you were there when she passed?
Yeah. I was right there when she took her last three breaths.
One of the harder things I have to do as a chaplain here is deliver death notices when loved ones die while you're incarcerated. So you didn't experience that with your mom, but she got sick while you were in here. How do people who, while they're here, how do you handle really stressful or difficult or hard life situations when you're stuck in here and you can't do anything? You can't go anywhere. You can't help anybody. How do you cope with that?
That's a good question. For me, being able to talk to somebody who I know is sincere, somebody who gonna listen to you, give you good feedback and try to, you know what I'm saying, who done been through some of the same things that you going through. You know, it's guys in here that done been through it.
Yeah.
And now I'm one that done kind of went through it, so I'm able to give feedback to guys who going through it now. And I always tell guys, before you know it, you know, your generation or your family generation before you start dying off, and it's like, wow, my dad's sick now with the same, my stepdad who raised me, he's sick now, 84 years old, got lung cancer. So
I've been here as a chaplain for 12 years, and there have been a few people over those years where it seems like there are people like you are somebody who gives other guys permission to maybe talk about things that are a little bit more vulnerable, or to loosen up a little bit and not have to be a certain way. Because I think there are a lot of people who are just looking for somebody to follow, to give them the authority or permission to be a different way. And they can see you relaxed, at peace, kind, generous. And it helps them see, oh, there's a different way. I don't have to be this way while I'm incarcerated. I can be this way like Roosevelt. Because they have plenty of people who they can look to justify poor behavior. But I think you're somebody, no matter where you're at, people look to you and say, okay, I'm safe around Roosevelt. And now I have this permission to be a certain way because Roosevelt's this way. That's something I've always noticed about you. And I think whether people say that to you or not, I think they're always appreciative of you because you give them that permission to be that way.
And I think it's important for individuals who are incarcerated to be a good representation of some of the things that society deems to be negative per se. So mm-hmm. For you, an example of giving a soft approach to manhood, I think that's a necessary component of being incarcerated.
Right.
Like incarceration can harden individuals and they feel like they have to be stoic or present as a gladiator. But I think it's certainly, like Corey just said, individuals appreciate the fact that you give that soft example of manhood.
Yeah, it's a gift. Whether you know or not, it's a gift that you've given to a lot of guys who have been here, I think. Okay, so I have a question. Do you have any idea how much longer you're going to be here at the Elkhart County Jail?
Well, I'm thinking right now, I'll be out of here in the next week or two.
Okay.
Going to the DOC for about a year.
Okay. And when you say DOC, you mean prison.
Yeah.
So once you leave here, once you leave DOC, when you get out, are there things, do you find getting out to be, are you excited to get out? Does it cause anxiety? Is it stressful? What emotions do you go through or do people sometimes go through before being released from incarceration?
Yeah. The biggest one is, for me, I deal with a little bit of both the stress of it and the joy of it. The biggest joy is just that I'm able to be a grown man. I'm able to do what I want type the ordeal. Not told when to go to bed and all that. But the stress is just like, am I going to be able to, financially, am I going to be able to hold me and my family down? How long is it going to take for me to get on my feet? Biggest thing is, getting my identity back, all that. You know, you lose state IDs, you lose Social Security cards, birth certificates, all that. And then for me, the biggest thing for me was transportation. Not being able to drive, license suspended for so long. I had to try to find a ride. The bus don't always take you where you need to go the time you need to be there. So that's one of the biggest things, transportation for me. A lot of guys deal with not having a home to go to, you know. I'm thankful that I do got sisters and brothers that'll take me in until I got on my feet. I see a lot of guys that have burnt a lot of their bridges with their family, got family, but family won't deal with them for one reason or another.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize when you're released from incarceration, just what it means to get back on your feet and get started all over again. It's not just starting from nothing. It's like almost starting from a deficit.
Yeah.
You're expected to do all of these things as soon as you get out. But like you said, a lot of people have no place to live, no transportation. Finding a job can be difficult. And this is like the practical stuff of, I need to get a license, and my social security card, and my birth certificate. And if you don't have any of those things, where do you start? It's just a long, hard process of getting back on your feet again.
It is.
A process of catching up. Because I think when individuals become incarcerated, like time essentially stands still for them, but the rest of the world maintains its momentum and keeps pushing forward. So being released, experiencing freedom, but from a different like scope or perspective, like technology is advancing. All these things have, you know, gone on with the wind, and you're standing in a space where you have to learn things that have, you know, already been in play. So with that being said, like what does advocacy look like for you? Or once you're being released from incarceration, what sort of advocacy do you desire? Like, what do you feel like could help you get back in the race and get on your feet from an agency perspective?
The biggest thing for me would probably be my driver license. If I got my driver license back, it'll eliminate a lot of things. Because it's jobs in Elkhart. We can get the jobs. It's just getting to them.
Right.
That's the biggest issue we have, I think, the number one. Because we go out there and we find it. We get the transportation to the job to do the application, do the interviews and all that. But who's going to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and take you to work every morning?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious, what role, if any, has your faith played in your life? I mean, you're someone who's able to maintain hope. You're always smiling. You always seem to be kind and helpful with people. You talk about being able to forgive people who've done you wrong. That's just something I think a lot of us, even who have grown up in the church and have had nice lives our entire lives, struggle with, and you're able to do it somehow. What role has faith played in all that in your life?
For me, being able to just know, listen to other people's stories who had it worse than I did, you know, and how blessed that they are, you know, and then they don't know it, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes I feel like it's my responsibility to tell them that, you know, that's something to be proud of, you know. I just feel like it started out with the guards here. I used to not get along with them, but after so long, I realized that I'm the one got to do my time. They don't. They go home every day. They drive to work, you know, so it's like I got to make it as easy for myself as I can. And this time around right here, I actually started a journal. So I've been doing a journal since I've been in here. I got a release plan, working on a release plan and all those. So that's something I never really did when I was in here. But I find that it helps me get away from the negativity on the dorm or other people who might be going through some emotions from the phone or whatever.
Don't you think everything is just such a matter of perspective?
Pretty much.
I can look at people who have it better than me and be envious of them. Or I can look at people who have had it worse than me and think, oh, okay, my life isn't too bad. So it's just interesting for you to say you're able to maintain some of this hope because there are always people who have it worse than you.
Yes.
And you're grateful for what you have.
Yes, sir.
So the journaling, it's important to have that sort of tool in your toolbox. Do you feel like this is the first time that you've exercised that tool?
It's definitely the first time. I heard a lot about it, but just being able to get up in the morning and write my day out, like, this is what I'm going to do today at 12 o'clock, or this is where I plan on being, got a shower, you know, create the little steps, the little things that you write down is something that become first and second to me throughout the day, you know. It's like, it's a responsibility thing pretty much.
Yeah. Okay, this might be a hard question to answer. But if there is one thing that you wanted to tell people on the outside about yourself that they might not know about you, or if you want to make it more general, like for people who are on the outside or maybe don't have a lot of interaction with people who've been incarcerated, is there something that you wish everybody out there knew about you or people who are in here who are coming out of incarceration?
If I was going to say something about myself, that people change, I know it's a low recidivism, it's a high recidivism rate, but the guys who reoffend, I know it's a high number, but it's a small number, and I like to be a part of that small number.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be 70, 80 years old looking back like I'm in jail again, what's going to happen?
Yeah, so, and people do change, and we're the ones who miss out when we write people off too soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you feel is your greatest strength that helps you like maintain in life or achieve your goals?
Patience. Patience with me. I used to not have it. And that's something that I had to instill in my everyday life in order to be able to move on from things that I, whether things didn't go the way I wanted them to, when I wanted them to, you know, I had to have the patience. If I prayed and asked God for something, I got to be patient and wait on it, you know. And I used to not have them patience, period.
It's so interesting to hear you talk about your old self, because I only know this Roosevelt. And it's so hard for me to imagine you any other way. I just think this is how you've always been.
Like, we're both dying.
Like, biggest thing for me, though, when I used to get locked, when I used to come to the jail or whatever, get arrested, I used to be very upset. Very upset, and I dealt with it throughout the days, and I never knew how to get rid of the anger. It was always built up inside of me, and I can say it pretty much started here when I started doing the walkthrough with the kids, scared straight kind of speaking for the jail here. Yep. It kind of opened me up to being able to talk about personal issues and things that I was going on with, that I wasn't able to talk about before.
What angered you most early on about being locked up or like having to return to jail?
My biggest anger for a long time was dropping out of school. I was upset with myself because I had big plans for myself. But if I was going to say that, that'd be it.
Yeah. You keep saying that you seem to be the hardest on yourself.
Yeah.
Like whenever we're talking about anger or frustration, you always bring it back to I'm just angry with myself or frustrated with myself. You're not looking to put that off onto somebody else.
No.
But I also think it's important to learn how to have compassion on each other. Or not each other. How do we have compassion for ourselves? Yeah, so if there's a way for you to look back at yourself and say, okay, I wish I would not have made that decision, but I was also going through a lot and I was doing the best I could with what I had. It's a hard, sometimes we're just the hardest on ourselves and we're the last people to forgive. And so I think that's something we all struggle with, but I just hear you keep saying, I was the most frustrated with myself. I was the most angry with myself. And hopefully at some point you can say, and I have a lot of compassion on myself.
Yeah, I do.
And that I trust God in all things.
Yeah.
Because God's purpose for us sometimes doesn't align with our own purpose that we want for ourselves.
Yeah. What I hope this podcast does, and I'm hoping people listen to this, and maybe they see the news of somebody who's incarcerated or they read something in the paper, they can remember this podcast with Roosevelt and they'll think, oh, Roosevelt seemed like a pretty good guy. I bet there's more to this story that I'm seeing on the TV or the newspaper. There's probably more to that person than what I'm reading. I just think we have a lot to learn from people like you who are in here and who have lived a lot of life and sometimes lives that are different than ours. And hopefully we can hear what you have to say and listen from it. And I think your story is going to inspire a lot of people to think about themselves. Okay, Roosevelt was able to handle these situations, to forgive people. He has hope in this. If Roosevelt can, surely I can find hope and forgiveness for people. So I'm grateful for you sharing your story.
Thank you.
You're the very first one.
I appreciate that.
All right. If anybody sees Roosevelt out in the streets in a couple weeks, say hi to him.
Yeah, don't be afraid to speak to him.
Don't be afraid to speak to him. He's a great guy. All right. Thanks, Roosevelt. Thanks, Tosh.
You've been listening to the Jailhouse Prophets podcast. If you enjoy stories like these, you can find more on our Elkhart County Jail Ministries website, Facebook, and Instagram. The Elkhart County Jail Ministry is a 501c3. If you would like to make a donation to the ministry, you can do so at www.elkhartcountyjailministry.org/donate.